Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, this is Donna. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. We are going to be, if you're in chilly climates right now, we're going to be traveling in mind. So use your imagination to the warm tropical waters of glorious beauty as far as fish goes, underwater life. Just imagine that you are going to be in a beautiful environment that is just going to be so nice and warm and cozy, and it's just absolutely awesome. If you're like me, here in the Pacific Northwest, we've had freezing temperatures, snow, winds, more snow, rain, winds, snow. And you go, does the sun really exist out there? It does. Anyway, I'm digressing here. We have a wonderful, wonderful guest. Her name is Beverly Factor. And Beverly is a woman that has an extremely unique occupation, and she has put together an absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous book that I think is not just for kids, but for adults. I was just enamored by it. Beverly, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Donna. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I was just delighted when I got your material because your approach with this book called Angelie Saves the Sea, I just think is fabulous. Now, I want my listeners to know a little bit about you. You are an award-winning photographer, but you have a real passion about exotic sea life. And my goodness, so many of those species are really in danger, but this photography in this book is absolutely gorgeous. And it gives us an opportunity to go into the underwater world and see all the vibrancy of color that's there. But you have also done articles, and you have work that's in all kinds of magazines like American Express Magazine, Men's Fitness. You've had it in the Sierra Clubs magazine and so many more. You've been featured on television. And this, well, what is it that brought this so close to your heart? And how in the world did you decide that you were going to become an underwater photographer of exotic fish?
That's a great question. Actually, it was a passion of mine to do what I love to do most in life when I had a career opportunity change. And I decided that I know that human beings can do anything they desire, and I thought, well, I'll make a list of my favorite things in the world and pick the top four and make it happen as a career. So I had been traveling and shooting underwater photography just for a hobby. Girlfriend of mine got me involved in diving, and it actually was just a hobby. And I, when I first made my first dive, I thought, like, oh, my God, it's so beautiful down here. I'll have to get a camera. So that's how it started. I just started shooting on vacations.
Wow.
And it just grew and grew and grew and grew. And I decided when I had this career change that I was going to do what I love to do most in life and make it happen. And it involved scuba diving, traveling around the world, sales and marketing, and underwater photography. So that's how the photography started.
With the photography and traveling around the world, now, when you chose to travel to different places in the world, because of what I'm seeing here, the vibrancy of color of the underwater world, I'm going to say, I'm making an assumption that it's in the warmer waters that you took these photos. Am I wrong?
Yes, you're absolutely right, because I now have a 77-degree minimum water temperature.
This is a particular, this is something I would consider necessity myself. I wouldn't want to be in those colder waters like we have out here in the Puget Sound. Oh, my goodness, you'll freeze to death.
Right, and I'm originally from Boston. I never dived there, but when I moved to California, I did get certified in Southern California here, And the water is really very cold. It's about 53 degrees, which means that you have to wear a 7-mil wetsuit and a heavy-duty weight belt to keep you under. And it was just freezing, and I'm very small, so I needed, like, a heater lamp with me, which they don't make.
They don't make body heaters for scuba suits? Gee whiz, that's really interesting.
Well, they don't make it, but I'll buy one if they do.
I gotcha. I'm totally in empathy with that one. Now, what is the biggest challenge for you as an underwater photographer? Is it the currents that sometimes you find yourself in? Or, you know, what is it for you when you are out in the waters like this in different parts of the world? What has been one of your greatest adventures when you were out there?
Well, to answer your question, there's a lot of challenges as an underwater photographer. The current is definitely one of them because you have to be very careful about not getting swept away. As a matter of fact, they now have e-perbs that they put on divers in certain locations that are known for strong currents, like the Galapagos Islands and some other really well-known current destinations. But the current also brings color, which is a lot of these images that you see in Angeles Saves the Sea are full of color, and that's due to the soft coral. And the soft coral survives only when there's a current because it brings the nutrients to it. So it is challenging to hold a camera steady and compose the scene while you're being swept away. So almost impossible. But you can get out of the current if you tuck around a rock. Or, you know, in the underwater world is like the above water world with mountains and different foliages and everything that you can actually tuck around to protect yourself a little bit from the current. But that's one of the challenges. The other challenge is when you're diving, obviously you're moving because you're in the water, and the fish are moving as well. They don't just exactly sit there like... if you're going to photograph a scene above water, you can shoot that many times with different settings on your camera. But when you're underwater, you get one chance at it because everything's moving, including you and the fish. Plus, if you don't light it up properly with all the color that you see in this book, I've used strobes underwater. And if you don't angle those strobes properly, you light up all the particles in the water as well. So... it's a one-shot deal, so to speak.
It's an amazing thing, and having patience is extremely important. And in today's world, the cameras that are used are so different than those that were used, let's say, 20 years ago. Is the equipment, I would imagine the equipment that you take down underwater is a lot lighter than what was used maybe 20 years ago. Am I correct?
Actually, not really, because now... because now we have to put a lot of these pictures that you see in this book are a lot of wide-angle shots, and they were done with my film camera in the old days. I've actually just started shooting digital underwater in the last couple of years. So most of my underwater photography has been film, although a lot of my above-water photography, like I do a lot of sailboat racing, is all digital. So the camera for my film underwater was smaller and lighter and easier to manage than the big housing I have now with the two big huge strobes, and the camera that I use now is heavier than the other one. So,
wow, I would have expected just the opposite.
It depends, you know, when you turn into a pro, you have to get all the pro stuff, so... I think it means bigger, heavier, and more expensive.
Oh, my goodness.
And I've got muscles now from carrying all that stuff. I actually...
a little... gee. Wow. Nobody will want to meet you at the wrong place at the wrong time in an alley somewhere because you're just going to be able to take them on. Let's talk about some of these photographs. What species of fish? I mean, you have an incredibly beautiful photograph right in the first part of your book. This gorgeous, gorgeous fish that's named Angeli that's iridescent with royal blue tones and yellows and greens. I mean, this is an incredibly beautiful fish. And then you have this awesome photo of coral next to it. Tell us, what kind of fish is this? I know my audience can't see it, but it looks like a good-sized fish.
Well, actually, it's called an angelfish. So Angeli is the perfect fish to choose for a story like this, because she's actually like an angel saving the sea. So that's why I named it Angeli, the angelfish saves the sea. But that's what it's called. She's part of the angelfish family, and she's a queen angel, to be specific, because there's different types of angelfish. So this one is known as a queen angelfish. In the back of the book, I don't know if you noticed, but you probably did, there's a glossary, and it tells you about each and every fish that are in the book. So if somebody was reading the book to one of their children, they could actually go to the back and learn about all these fish before they read the book to their children. They seem very, very smart.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think it's a great book, like I said, even for adults to get. And I think that there are so many adults. In fact, I know this because when I did my children's book, my first children's book so many years ago, I was astonished at how many adults absolutely are enamored of children's books. And this one, again, the photography is so incredible in it. And you have Crabby, this particular crab. And Angeli has decided she is going to save the earth. She really wants to be a part of Earth Day. She wants to be able to speak or represent the population of the sea, because there's a lot of problems. And this is what your book is about. Now, why did you become one of these people that felt like you had to get a message out regarding the environment of the sea?
Well, I think it's because I've dived so much. I've seen so many changes all over the world in the ocean that I felt by making a picture book like this for children, then the children will get to see what the ocean really looks like and become enamored by it through this book and its characters, so that they'll be more aware and help protect it, because knowledge is key. And a lot of books about the ocean are all illustrated, not that that's bad or not, but there's not many of them that have actual real photography in it, so that kids can really see what it really looks like underwater. So that's basically why I did something like this. Although I've had calendars out for many years that are still out there that have beautiful pictures in it as well. This children's book is directed specifically for kids, and the story is an exciting adventure story, so they actually can pay attention, and they end up rooting for Angeli to make her journey.
What are the biggest changes that you've noticed in the years that you've been diving?
Well, I've noticed, like, for example, I've gone to Thailand quite a bit, and I've noticed a lot of changes in the coral reefs that have not as much coral on them anymore, and the colors have changed. Some areas that I've been to in Papua New Guinea were beautiful and clear, and then they had a lot of runoff in the water, so it wasn't very clear anymore. I've been in Malaysia, where they still continue to do dynamite blasting, and they do that. They actually, and there's a lot of countries that do this, they drop dynamite in the ocean so that it'll blow up the reef, so the fish will float to the top, and the fishermen scoop the fish off the top of the reef on the water for food.
Holy Moses.
But they don't realize that they're destroying the very thing that's feeding them, which is the reef, because now there is no more fish down there because there's no more reef to feed off of. But I have also seen some areas that are trying to help protect and educate the natives, including in Indonesia. There's an area called Wakatobi, which is northern portion of Indonesia. And this one resort, Wakatobi Resort, actually pays the villagers around the surrounding areas so they won't fish the reefs out for food. They give them money so they can go buy food instead of fishing and blowing up the place. So they've helped preserve it.
Wow. Well, that just shows that if you can, that's something I think a lot of people do not understand, that if you do not have a way of getting food, if you're living off of the sea, the food from the sea, which many people in many parts of the world have for generations, and if you do not understand how everything is linked together, just what you mentioned about the coral and the creatures that feed off of it, live within it, then you're going to starve. And this has happened throughout the centuries in many different parts of the world, and people, groups of people just disappeared because they couldn't get food.
Exactly.
They didn't have an agricultural base of any kind. They didn't know how to do it. And so their people died out. And I think when it comes to the sea, we are finally realizing this is not an infinite resource. It really is very finite. And that is what I loved about your book, because you bring out information about so many creatures that are in the sea, and we feed on a lot of creatures that are in the sea. And when you have trawlers that go around, and I've seen films on these trawlers, these things are massive. They're just absolutely huge, and anything and everything that is on the floor of the ocean, they will pick up, and it often is, a lot of it is wasted, but a lot of it isn't. I mean, it's just, it's processed, and then there's no way. You have to seed these places again, and they have to be left alone so they can come back. And it really is important to educate peoples in parts of the world, I think, just as you mentioned that they've been doing in Indonesia, and I think the people there are to be complimented, that you make it so that people have a way of getting food. Because let's face it.
Right, exactly.
You know, if you don't have food, you're going to do anything and everything you can to get it. And you're not even thinking about how you're decimating things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very important note, I think. And I'll just pop in something here. When I was broadcasting in Hawaii years ago, I learned that the Polynesian people had experienced decimating the food supply from the sea in various areas hundreds of years ago. And when they finally figured it out, then it was the responsibility of the chiefs, the Hawaiian chiefs, to make sure that things weren't overfished. And they didn't have the population like we've got today.
Mm-hmm.
But they were the first that I'm aware of. And I know the Romans did it, but the Polynesians were also doing aqua farming. And they had it on the Hawaiian Islands. And they would have their pools where they would grow shrimp and other things. But it was taboo sometimes to fish in the oceans because they didn't want to overfish.
Mm-hmm.
And that was done. And you could be put to death if you did, if you violated the taboo.
That's...
So they would move the fishing sites so that it wouldn't be overused.
Mm-hmm.
And I just find it fascinating the way certain groups of people acquired that understanding, and here we are in the Western world and in the European world, and we still haven't caught up with it. And the Asian countries, Japan and China and others, they have, you know, so many people to feed, and so often the sea has supplied what they've needed, but we're doing the same thing, and that's what Anjali is talking about.
Yes, and to give you a little synopsis of the story, she goes through the sea and she takes pictures of all her friends underwater who also all tell her why they're in danger, like Krabby the Crab gets caught in the fishing nets that are on the ground, and Monty the manta ray helps Anjali when she gets caught in the oil spill, because Anjali meets all her friends underwater that she takes pictures of that also tell her why they're endangered underwater. And she has to get from point A to point B because she's making a picture book to show to the world leaders on Earth Day. So they'll show the land people above the beauty and the problems of the sea below, so they'll be aware and to help protect it. But by getting caught in the oil spill and the chemical spill and all these natural disasters that are happening to our oceans underwater, poor little Angelie's journey gets delayed and delayed and delayed, and she has 2 hours left to go to make the Earth Day presentation. And she meets, like, Cuddy the turtle, tells her about her turtle eggs getting stolen, which has been, like, a lot of awareness made of through the Internet. I've gotten so many emails about turtle eggs, it's unbelievable, being stolen, and seeing all these people dig up these turtle eggs off beaches in bags just to eat them. So Angelie meets all these characters that educate her on what's happening to them underwater. And she's almost at the Earth Day presentation, and she meets Dolphy the dolphin, who has helped her by giving her a ride on his back. But the two of them get clobbered by a fishing trap, and they're pinned underwater. So it's so
the adventure continues.
You have to read the book to find out what happens.
That's right. That's right. Now, you brought up some interesting things about the turtles. And I know in many parts of the world, it's not just people that are eating the turtles. It is sometimes species of animals that have found that they're a very good food supply because eggs are loaded with nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that they're having to deal with because there's many predators that will scarf up those eggs and they wait because they know that this is a time when they can really feast. And there are so many things that go on in life, and here we have, as human beings, we've got a population development that is so absolutely unreal, and we've created a lot of problems in many of our environments because of not really understanding what the long-term effect is going to be. It's just like the pesticides on properties and on farmlands, and it's getting into water, and prescription drugs getting into water. Everything is affecting everything else. So mm-hmm. That's one of the beauties of your book, is that you convey this message not in a way that I think is fearful or intimidating, but it's a way of enabling people, children of all ages, to say it frankly, to gain a perspective of, one, the beauty that is there, and two, how significant sea life is to the wellness of the human species.
Exactly. Exactly. Like when Angelie meets Murray the moray eel, he swallows bottle caps. And if a child now, from reading this book, goes on the beach and sees a bottle cap or some type of plastic, because that's another huge problem that we are encountering now, that child's going to think about Murray the moray and probably pick up the bottle cap or a piece of plastic.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is very important. One of the things with plastic that is very real is that there is biodegradable plastic. Now, there's different types of plastic for different things. And plastic, in many ways, has really benefited the storage of food, et cetera. But as you've said, we haven't been conscientious about what we do. We just dump. What is the area in the ocean, I forget how many miles wide it is, where the currents converge, all the trash that's been put in the sea, and there's so much there. It's right there. I think is it in the Atlantic?
You know, I'm not exactly sure where it is, but I think you're correct about that. And it's miles wide. It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
It's very huge.
Yeah, that's something that people have photographs of.
Yeah.
And I thought, what a business if someone can figure out how to go out there, pick up all this stuff, process it, get it out of the ocean. We could do the same thing on land. There's so much in the way of recycling.
Exactly.
And
you know, and I live in Laguna Beach, and they just made an ordinance of no more styrofoam. You can't serve styrofoam anymore. Plastic, stuff like that just floats and doesn't degrade.
Mm-hmm.
And when I sail quite a bit, I see all these balloons in the ocean from people just letting their balloons go in the sky. Well, they're pretty to watch when they float away, but they come down, and they come down in the ocean, and then some animal thinks it's food or fish or dolphin or something, swallows it, and they end up dying because it obviously doesn't digest.
Now, that's a very good point. That is something that many people wouldn't even give a second thought to. Mm-hmm. They just, as you say, they're looking at it. So this isn't done vindictively. It is a thinking process of asking yourself, is this going to affect the environment in any way? And with balloons, when they break, if you don't, that's right, they're filled with helium, they're going to go with the air currents and then come down somewhere, and more than likely you could end up in the ocean. They found sharks with plastic and all kinds of stuff in them, and other whales, too. They found all kinds of stuff inside.
Exactly. So hopefully through this book, you know, at least people, including children and adults, will be a little more aware of things that are happening and might think twice about throwing away something that's not properly disposed of. Or, you know, next time they see a bottle cap on the street, they'll pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
Things like
and
that.
I think there's just so much that we need to be consciously attuned to, that what we've taken for granted is not to be taken for granted. I think of hearing someone talking about the Mother Ganges in India and saying the mother is very, very ill. She is sick. And she's sick because of all the waste and the challenges with overpopulation and the water. And I've never forgotten that. And it's something that goes on today. But when you have a sick ocean, when you have a sick environment, then we who occupy it are going to have major problems as well.
Yeah.
It goes full circle. We're a part of this experience of life, and we are not so superior. I think that so many parts of culture have felt that the human being was superior to everything else on Earth. And we're just a part. We are just a little bit of a part of a phenomenal, phenomenal system of life. And we're codependent. We are dependent on healthy environments around us. And I think that's something that your book, Anjali, conveys. But I love the photography. It is
Thank you so much. Absolutely
gorgeous. And I was reading in your material that Jean-Michel Cousteau has endorsed your book, which is just marvelous because the Cousteau family has been involved. My goodness, I don't remember how far back Jacques Cousteau went with this, but all of their research, they were really the people, that family, were really the individuals that made the breakthrough regarding the sea.
Yes, exactly. I know. I was quite honored. I've met him several times, maybe three or four times, and at various film festivals and things, and he loved my book. And it's on his website. And Ted Danson, who's very into the ocean as well, endorsed it, along with Oceana, who does a huge job of helping to protect our oceans all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
They've endorsed it. And Greg McGilvery of IMAX Films, who does all kinds of wonderful things, filmmaking underwater, has endorsed it. And Weiland, I'm sure you've heard of him, or who does whaling walls all over the world, who brings attention to the ocean, has also endorsed it. So I'm quite honored that I can put their name on my book.
Oh, absolutely. But it well deserves it. It's absolutely gorgeous. So for those of you that love the sea, those of you that are intrigued by that part of our Earth, as I am, I think you'll find this book, Anjali Saves the Sea, something that you would like to have in your library because it is visually absolutely wonderful. And the story is charming. And if you're like me and every once in a while little people are in your house, you could sit down with this book, share the story with them, and they are going to be mesmerized. And if you're a teacher or if you know anyone who's a teacher, this would make a great gift for them to share with their students, especially elementary school students. This is Donna Siebel. I want to let you know that Beverly, you can find out about her and her work at beverlyfactor.com. That's Beverly. Factor, FACTOR.com, and you'll see all of this stuff there. She's just got a wonderful website. So I do encourage you to do it. Beverly, thank you so very much for being my guest today.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it.
This is Donna Sebo. Check out BeverlyFactor.com and Angeli Saves the Sea. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. And I'm so delighted we are sharing time together today. I get so excited when I find out about people like my guest today. And the reason I get excited about being able to interview them is not only because of their wonderful talents, but the fact that they dare to do something different. They're marching to their own drummer. Have you ever been in a situation, I know I have, where you had a job and you'd sit at that job and you'd say, what in the world am I doing in this job? I really am not that good at it. Or even if you are good, you go, I'm going bananas. If I don't get into something else, I think I'll just scream. Well, lots of times we find ourselves in job situations because we need to make a living, right? All of us have gone through that route. But there comes a time when you really have to listen to that part of yourself that says, check out deep sea diving. Check out how to raise 5,000 different types of tarantulas. Check out this. Check out that. Check out the other. You know, so many times we get those voices in our head, especially if you've had people around you that are very conservative. And when I use that, it's not a negative term. But maybe they have always been afraid to try something different. They have lived their life within a box. They've denied themselves the opportunity of their own individuality. And it's really a sad thing to see. They'll say, oh, no, it just isn't going to work. It's not practical enough. They don't even get involved in a side manner into something that they really love. And that is what we need to remember. Sometimes we have to be in jobs we don't like. But if you love art, if you love kayaking, if you want to climb Mount Rainier, if you want to fly, if you wanted to do something, it's going to take you into an entirely different environment than what you have on an everyday basis. By golly, go for it. Try it out. You never know. It's so important that as human beings, we step out into different aspects of life and its experiences. I love the line in the movie Auntie Mame with Rosalind Russell. If you've never seen the movie, gotta watch the movie. Auntie Mame is just this absolutely unbelievable characterization. She's bigger than life. She doesn't fit into any paradigm. She is just one of a kind. And by golly, she finally finds that she is able to find her niche. There's a scene that she has in that movie where her secretary, who is this bumbling, ugly-looking female, and she says to her, life is a banquet, and most people are starving to death. Now think about those words. Whoever wrote those words really had a profound understanding of life, because life is a banquet. But you almost have to develop that childlike quality that says, I wonder. I'd like to explore it. You know, one of the safest places you can go to explore to your heart's content and do it absolutely for free is your public library. Don't be afraid to dip your mental toes into something different. Try it. You'll like it. Maybe you've always wanted to fix something very special in the way of food. Go to your library. Go to your local bookstores. Check things online. We have so much available to us, and yet we get caught up with all kinds of what I call mental miseries because we're not willing to step outside of a box, because we're not willing to explore. And we feel like life is just so miserable and humdrum, and we listen to the news too much, and we just feel like everything's going you-know-where in a handbasket. And I want to say that's ridiculous. You have dominion over your mind. You have dominion over the processes of thinking. It's up to you. And what I think you're going to find, this is what I found, is that you have to be vigilant. I even have to be vigilant even to this day. It's so easy to trip back into the mental illusions of lack, of poverty, of fear, of all kinds of stuff that comes along with fear. And who needs it? If you want, give yourself a timer. Have 15 minutes of total misery, and the timer goes off, say, okay, that's it. I'm going to go get a piece of chocolate, and I'm getting my life back on track. You need to have a good sense of humor, but also be aware. There is so much in this life we are not aware of. And if you want to be involved in a new way, explore. Find out about those special parts of you that want to grow and expand and to uncover the greatness that you have inside yourself. And it's a lot of fun. Oh, it's so much fun. You may end up becoming the next dancing on the moon star. Who knows? I wanted to share with you a cute story. By the way, if you want to give me a buzz, 888-627-6008 is the number to call into. That's 888-627-6008. If you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then I'll give you my mental impressions, and you're welcome to ask me a question if you like. So give me a buzz, 888-627-6008. Teachers often get remarks from students that they would just as soon have not heard. But this one teacher had a very good sense of humor because she has a third-grade class. And in this third-grade class, they were talking about genetics. And she was just really enjoying talking about genetics. And when she at one point said to her students, I want to ask you a question, she was pointing to dimples. She had very deep dimples. And she asked them, what trait do you think I passed on to my children? And one of those third graders called out in a very loud voice, wrinkles! just what every woman always wants to hear from an innocent third grader. Oh, terrible, 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 terrible. Of course, I'm just kidding. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz at 888-627-6008. Now, I want to fill you in on some information here. I'm going to do it quickly. On the 21st of January, which is this coming Saturday, I'm going to be having a radio interview with a delightful woman, Deborah Scott. Now, this is going to be live from 5 to 6 on Saturday, the 21st, Pacific time. I'm participating in what is called a motivational marathon. And there are 46 people that are participating in this. And I'm going to be giving readings on the air, et cetera. And if you would like to listen to the show, if you want to call in, all you have to do is go to www.motivationmarathon.com. That's motivationmarathon.com. And you can hear it all. Now, also, that Saturday evening, we are welcoming in the new year, 2012, at the Ascension and Delight Foundation Center. Now, this is going to be an inspirational evening. The program is from 7 until 10. We're going to be sharing positive perspectives for the new year, and I'm also going to be giving demonstrations to the people in the audience. I'm going to be talking about mind dynamics, and the admission is $20 per person. Again, the time is 7 to 9 p.m. The doors will open at 6:30. The location is 1222 South Weller Street in Seattle, and if you need more information, call Melanie at 206-356-6356. That's 206-356-6356. And then a week away, a little bit more than a week away, January 28th, the Quantum Mind 2 class. Robert Newman and I, we are going to be presenting this program. It is wonderful. We have a few spaces left. We're only able to take in 25 people. This is an opportunity to explore and discover your own unique mind talents and to become aware of how you can empower prosperity and positive direction in your professional and your personal life. Now, where is this going to be held? The Bridgeport Place, and this is at 5250 Bridgeport Way West in University Place, Washington. Hours are 10 to 4. 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Lunch is going to be served. The fee for this is $59.95, $65 at the door. If you want to reserve your spot, give me a call, 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604. And also, for those of you in California that are listening, I'm going to be appearing at the Conscious Life Expo February 10th, 11th, and 12th. This event is taking place at the Airport Hilton near LAX, and you're not going to want to miss it. There are speakers from around the country, all kinds of presentations, all kinds of vendors. I'm going to be speaking on Friday the 10th at 4 p.m., and I'll also be in booth number 704 doing many consultations for people and reviewing different book materials from prospective authors. So go to ConsciousLifeExpo.com and you'll find out why this is going to be such a good event to attend. And by the way, I do need assistance to help at my booth, and if you'd like to do that, give me a call at my office, 253-582-5604. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you want to chat, 888-327-7602. That's 888-627-6008. I gave you the wrong number. 888-627-6008. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprisin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprisin online or call 800-959-1007, that's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprisin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them?
then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedros accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny. They will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, this is Donna. I have a wonderful poem here. We've had such weird weather here in the Pacific Northwest. We've had temperatures drop into the 20s. Everything's freezing. We've had snow come in. Then we have rain. This morning I was walking Victor. This blizzard came through. It was absolutely glorious. Here I'm walking. I'm all dressed. I've got stuff covering my head. I got an umbrella to keep the snow off of me and this type of thing. And I'm telling you, it was gorgeous. Absolutely spectacularly gorgeous. And I came across this poem by Alisa Aklau, and I just love it. And the picture that's here is what I was seeing this morning. Of course, it's all gone now. And this is what she said. The snow falls free and light all throughout the slumbering night, covering each tree in wrappings of white, tied with the bow of winter. Isn't that wonderful? Didn't she use her words just so magically? Just really paints the verbal picture that you want to fill your mind. Well, that's the way it was this morning and this afternoon. Sun's out. We got blue skies. We do have blue skies in Seattle. And almost all the snow's gone. I mean, the temps have just been that varied. So it's been quite an interesting experience. Oh, by the way, I know a lot of people have a gluten intolerance. And I came across a recipe for brown rice griddle cakes. And there is a grandmother that shared her recipe. And she said she was always trying, and this lady's in her 70s, when she was growing up, times were pretty tough. And she said they had to figure out a way to stretch their budget. Well, sometimes they didn't have much, but it seemed like rice was a very good thing to use. And she has this brown rice griddle cake. And I thought, okay, this is really something. Now, this does have milk in it and eggs. And I'm going to share it with you because I think that sometimes, especially when you have kids, there may be a need for a change or just to give them a different taste of things. And the brown rice griddle cakes are really quite good. And I would say if you added some freshly grated nutmeg to it, and a little bit of cinnamon, vanilla. Man, these are going to be scrumptious. Now, this is what you do. You've got to have 1 cup of brown rice. And you could use your instant brown rice. You know, I discovered, to my amazement, there's a lot of nutrients in the instant brown rice. I didn't think there was. I still like using the regular brown rice. But there are nutrients that are captured when they're processing that rice that goes right back into the rice particle itself. You're going to need to cook 1 cup of brown rice, according to the package directions. You want to place the rice in a large bowl, that has been cooked, and it'll expand to 2 cups. And then you mix 1/2 teaspoon of salt into 1 cup of milk and pour it over the warm rice. And warm rice, brown rice takes about 45 minutes to cook. And as in a separate bowl, you want to beat 2 egg yolks until it's thickened, and you want to stir the yolks in 1 tablespoon of melted butter, and 3/4 cup plus 2 tablespoons of all-purpose flour in the rice mixture until it's blended. Now, you might want to use rice flour. If there's a gluten intolerance, try the rice flour. And then you're going to beat 2 egg whites until they're stiff, fold it into the rice mixture, and in a nonstick skillet, you have a little bit of oil over medium-high heat, and you add 1/4 cupfuls of your rice mixture in batches to the skillet, cooking, turning once, until they're golden brown and cooked through. Takes about 1 to 2 minutes per side. Now, the flour was in this original recipe, But you can substitute other flours for this. And if you use regular brown rice, you're going to have all the bran. So you're getting fiber, you're getting nutrient, and it just has a lighter flavor. So try it. It's not going to hurt at all, and it's something that may surprise you how the kids are going to really, really like it. Now, I wanted to let you know, tomorrow we're going to have Susan Weed. Her book is titled Down There. Now, we're going to be talking about sexual health. And this may sound like something that's a little odd, but there's so much information relative to both men and women, but especially women, about how you can stay healthy and not have problems. And Susan is really quite knowledgeable, and I think you're going to be surprised at the wonderful information that she is going to be sharing with us. So tomorrow there's that, and then Thursday's going to be an open mic day because my guest, who was scheduled, she became very ill, and she said, Don, I'm just not going to be able to do the show. But on Friday, we're going to be talking with Maria Cooper Janis. We're going to be talking about her very, very famous father, Gary Cooper. A magnificently gorgeous book has been put out. Fabulous photographs about a man that was loved by millions. And stories about his life that are just now coming out. It's really wonderful. So his daughter is going to be with us on Friday live from New York City. So we've got a nice batch of things going on this week, and I'm so delighted that you are able to join us and to, well, share in the experience. I think that that's very positive. I had some information that I came across that I thought was really good. And the words read, anybody can be replaced in under a second. And I thought, now this is interesting because it's true. There's always, nobody's indispensable. You know, we all can, how should I say it? That wasn't the right way to say it. We can all, when we leave this earth, we're going to be special to those, but there's always going to be someone that is going to be able to fill the void, because that's the way life is. Nature abhors a void. So, anyway, this is an article that was written by a man by the name of Walter Mosley, and he said, in the 60s, he was really very, very fond of Kennedy. And in his young mind, when he heard about Kennedy's death, he was really quite stunned. And his father told him that he had been shot. He said he was gone that fast. He said, mm-hmm. And he said, at that moment, I realized that a very famous man could be replaced. And could be replaced in an instant. And he said he was talking to a friend one day, and his friend was saying, I'm leaving my job, but I got to stay because I have to help them. He was going on and on and on. And he said, you don't have to do anything. You leave and they'll take care of their own business. They don't need you. You may want to stay. You may want to help them. But never make the mistake of thinking that you're so important that the world can't live without you, because no one is that important ever. An interesting perspective, wouldn't you say? This is Donna Seaboy. I know that we're out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You are significant as an individual, even though I've shared that story with you. But remember, you want to live your life with an awareness, an understanding that you have to be awake so that whatever you do in life is going to leave a legacy that will be carried on because of people's memories of you. Physical things can pass away very, very quickly, but the quality of character of a person, of a human being, has a lasting effect in the minds and memories of people that love them. Remember that, and remember, your actions do make a difference. Donna Seaboy here. So glad you were able to join me today. And I hope you can do it again tomorrow. Same time, same place, right here at bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.